They called on out to me.
Said, hey, son, the KNBR's Giants postgame. You're talking baseball with Marty Lurie on The Sports Leader.
And I'm getting very old.
All right, nice to have everyone back on this Saturday night. And thank Ron Wotus and Bruce Jenkins and Bill Lasky for the last 2 hours of roughly baseball conversation. And it's a very special thing to be able to do this, and I'm really glad to be here. And you hear the spots for the advertisers, and it's really important to let them know that you appreciate it. And we can try to give you a little bit of what baseball, what we think it's all about. So nice to have everyone with us on a Saturday night. And it brings in Kerry Crowley. We just heard our song. Kerry, of course, Bay Area News Group. And with Kerry, again, is Katie Wu of MinorLeagueBaseball.com. So first, Katie, how are you?
I'm great, Marty. How are you?
We're doing fine, doing fine. And, of course, you're both ASU. See, I like the pairing, the ASU graduates. I like this. You and Kerry are. So, first of all, Katie, how has your week been?
It's been okay. You know, I feel like I've adjusted pretty much to the stay-at-home mandate. Was a little excited. Got to do some reporting over the last week and hopped on a few podcasts. So that was cool. You know, just trying to stay busy and I don't want to have too much time on my hands because, you know, it's pretty easy to get bored these days, as you know. So I try to stay as busy as possible.
All right. Well, we'll have baseball news over the next few weeks. Kerry, how are you doing?
I'm hanging in there, Marty. How are you?
Pretty good. You know, obviously I'm down here and you guys know the area so well. Temperatures are, you know, 70s to 80s. And next week I see the number 9. You know, popping up there a few days. So I think that's coming. But, you know, just thinking about baseball and thinking, you know, how everything changes day to day and where will we be in 60 days and just seeing the sort of the momentum of trying to ease up on all these regulations just a little bit makes me think that if that's where we're heading now in April, that in 2 months, if people stick to their distancing and the masks and washing your hands and all the things that got us to a point of maybe turning this around a little bit, then maybe in 60 days, I'll let you start. Maybe in 60 days, there is a possibility that we can have some sort of baseball.
Yeah, it certainly would be nice to have more concrete plans from the professional sports leagues and not just baseball, because I think it would be good to have some live programming on TV for everyone who's staying at home and staying so diligent and keeping everyone safe by staying at home. And so baseball can play a part in kind of reshaping things when we do start to open things up. And I think that'll be really fun for not just the players and coaches, but the fans of the sport too, when this comes back. And so it will likely be empty stadiums and, you know, the hope is 2020, but if we can get baseball on the field, I think that fans will start to see that society's, you know, going back to normal. And that is where we ultimately want to head because, as you know, we're nowhere close to being out of the woods on this, unfortunately. But the sooner that we can get there, the more excited I'll be and the more excited I think a lot of people will be once the plans start to become more concrete.
I think so. Katie, this is Katie and Kerry. I got two K's going on here in my mind.
I know, it's a little tricky.
It is a little tricky. One thing I wanted to mention to you, and I know this is an older person, but he was the baseball coach at Arizona State for many, many, many years, and he was one of the legendary baseball coaches in the country, and he passed away this week. Did you guys ever hear of Bobby Winkles?
Oh, yes. I could remember the name of the book, but he was huge to Arizona State and the legacy that he left on that college baseball program. A couple years ago, I think it was his biography that I was reading or something very similar. And, you know, being relatively new to Arizona State sports history, I wasn't too familiar with Bobby Winkles, but just an incredible legacy he left in that program that they're still trying to live up to today.
Yep, he was the first college coach to try to manage in the big leagues. He managed the Angels and the A's, And he's in the College Baseball Hall of Fame. But I remember when they brought him out of college. Kerry, do you remember Winkles at all?
Oh, yeah. I remember specifically before Arizona State's baseball program moved over to Phoenix Municipal Stadium, they used to play games at Packard Stadium. It was one of those famous stadiums in college baseball. But the field at Packard Stadium was Bobby Winkles Field. And so, you know, you learn about his legacy and you learn about the relationships that he had and all the major league players that he coached at Arizona State, because it's produced more major leaguers than any other college. And he had a very close personal relationship with Barry Bonds. I don't believe that he was his college coach, but he had a really close relationship with the Bonds family, and because Bonds went to ASU as well. And so I think that that's a little Giants tie to him, is that Bonds really considered him someone who was foundational in his life. And so Bobby Winkle's impact on the sport, obviously tremendous, and was definitely sorry and sad to hear of his passing this week.
Yeah, good. Both of you guys, very good. I'm impressed. Because when I put it out there, I wasn't sure, but you're both on it. Very good.
Marty, you like to test us.
Yeah, no, this is very good. The Walter Cronkite School should be very proud of both of you. Very good. But, you know, you guys, and of course we keep in touch during the week by texting and everything. And, Kerry, you brought up the point of if baseball does come back, and I think you're right about this, the rosters are going to be greatly different than what we're used to seeing. And give us your thought on that. And, Katie, you know all the minor leaguers and people that could be part of this thing. Kerry, well, what could this thing look like?
Yeah, so I floated this idea to you earlier this week, Marty, because, of course, if you're going to have a season this year, you're going to have expanded rosters. Maybe we're talking 30, 35 players. Who knows? Maybe you put the whole 40-man roster out there. But in the Giants' case, if you have a season for the major leaguers and you're not able to have a season for the minor leaguers, Joey Bart is on this team. Joey Bart is definitely the catcher alongside Buster Posey, and they'd probably split time. And then you start to go down the line. You probably want Elliot Ramos in a uniform if you've got 35 guys on the field, and Elliot Ramos can play maybe every other day. He can take reps in center and right field. And I would go as far, if you're really expanding these rosters to 40 players, I would put Hunter Bishop on the field too, because he's a tremendous athlete. And what do you have to lose if you're the San Francisco Giants at this point? You're probably not going to win any of these divisions, no matter how they're restructured. And so you go ahead and you put your best prospects on the field. You make sure that they're developing in real time. And you go from there, because there's going to be tough decisions made, but I'm not sure that you keep around an extra veteran minor leaguer when you could groom your top prospects on the field in Arizona if this plan does come to fruition.
Mm-hmm. Katie, what do you think?
I think those are all a ton of excellent points. I think what we need to consider here is, while Major League Baseball is very committed to the best of their ability to having baseball at some point this season when it's safe to do so, the longer we go without a Major League season, the less likely it is that we have a minor league season. And while that will cause an entire variation of problems in itself, one of them that the league will have to think about is, what are they going to do with these minor league players and teams too? And I think that's why we'll probably see roster expansions, 35, maybe 40, like Kerry was saying, because there's so many guys that are going to be just sitting and not developing. And, you know, baseball players, as we all know, the injuries, especially if you're a pitcher, they happen so quickly when you get out of shape. So I think a lot of teams are going to have to worry about, you know, if there is no minor league season, how do we get these players and keep them in shape? And I think the best thing to do is make sure your top prospects are right there with your big league club. If it comes down to, like Kerry was saying, a veteran guy, like a veteran minor leaguer, like a Billy Hamilton, you know, as much as you want to see him play, you also want to protect your younger talent, the future of the game. And so I think a lot of those tough decisions will have to happen if, you know, there is no minor league season. So I would expect to see much more prospect heavy rosters if that is the case.
Mm-hmm. But then, of course, you're paying your major leaguers. That's going to be an issue, too. And if you're going to pay them, you probably want them to play. But I agree with both of you. If you took your top 10 minor leaguers who should be getting playing time this year, because there will be no minor leagues. I mean, I see that coming. I don't see how they can have any minor leagues. So you would be, you guys are right. You'd be losing a year of development for very important players. And I agree. I think the roster would be 35 or 40 players, and they designate so many per day. but they'd have everybody working out and being part of it. You know, it's like Back to the Future. Remember Doc Brown? He'd say, Marty, you're messing with the time continuum. You can't do this, Marty. You know, you're messing with the time continuum of the minor league development, so I think they've got to do it. I agree with you. So Ramos, Bart, yeah, you're right. Well, why would you keep Kerry, I can't even remember who the catchers were. Who are the catchers?
Well, you've got Tyler Heineman and Rob Brantley, and both right. of those guys have limited major league experience. Brantley's got a little more than Heineman, but you'd have Joey Bart play ahead of both of those guys. And what about just having a Sean Gelly or a Seth Corey come out of the bullpen and throw an inning at a right. time? I mean, how much could that hurt? Would you rather have yep. Trevor Cahill or Jerry Blevins, who was released by the Giants? I don't think so. I think you want to see these guys continue to develop and give them every opportunity to kind of speed up this rebuild timeline if this is the scenario.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that actually makes it interesting.
Yeah.
Because the season is such a hybrid aberration anyway. So might as well, and I've said this before on the show, might as well have fun with it in some way. And it certainly would create interest to see Joey Bart playing. I mean, from being a selfish San Francisco person involved with the media, I'd love to see Ramos, Bart, and Bishop play every day.
Yeah, exactly. I think the Giants could go ahead and just start trading the guys on one-year contracts. I know that Kevin Gausman and Drew Smyly are here to help, but maybe they trade those guys, get Jeff Samardzija to a contender, and really facilitate this rebuilding process, depending on how many games are played, because it could get fun, it could get interesting, and you know, these are the conversations we hope to be having. We hope to be talking about the game with specifics like this 2 months from now, like you alluded to, Marty.
Yeah, I really believe in 90 days things are going to, because if you go backwards 90 days of January, nothing was going on. And if you go forward 90 days, who knows what could be going on in 90 days? And as long as people have respect for how we got here, you know, we didn't get here with prayers and thoughts. You've got my prayers and thoughts. No. People got here from not spreading this disease, and that's my opinion. And I don't think I'm controversial in saying it. So people have got to stay that course to move forward, and I hope people do. I do. Mm-hmm. Kerry, you're out there on the front lines. What do you think?
Oh, well, you know, the more you read and report about this, as you know, I've been working on our breaking news team for the last 4 weeks. I think that we're starting to see some positive signs. The one thing that we absolutely need to make all of this possible is mass testing. And whether it's serology tests that discover whether you have the antibodies built up from being exposed to the coronavirus, or PCR tests, the Abbott test that you know, can give you your results in the hospital and can spit out results within 10 minutes. It's critical that if you look around the world and see the countries that are starting to get back to normal, South Korea being one of them, you've got to be able to test people. And so Major League Baseball may be able to procure tests and get players on the field sooner with no fans, but for society to start to feel safe too, and I think that they would want to be sensitive to the rest of society's needs and desires and hopes with regard to healthcare, I think that testing is going to be so critical, and it's going to be the next big topic of conversation that's going to dominate the headlines for the next month, because we all want to know if we've been exposed. We all want to know if we've had it, and we're only going to know a lot more about this virus when we're able to test in mass.
Well, 90 days takes us to July. I have to believe within 90 days they'll have enough tests to test 1,000 major leaguers.
I would have believed that, so. that we would have been prepared to test them all by now. So you try to stay cautiously optimistic.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, it's not a great subject, but it is the truth, and it does impact whether we'll see baseball or not. So a couple of things this week. One, Katie, you were fabulous talking about PlayStation last weekend. How is that going?
Oh, thanks, Marty. Actually, that's a little bit of what I worked on this previous week. There are two top prospects in baseball in the top 100 that are in this tournament. Giants fans will probably be a little bit a little bit biased against them, as one is the A's representative and one is the Dodgers representative. Both of their top prospects are in it. Dodgers is the number two overall prospect in baseball and Gavin Lux, and the A's top prospect is the number two pitching prospect in baseball, and that's Jesus Luzardo. So that was kind of fun to be able to talk to them and to watch. And I don't know if you, Marty, or you, Carrie, you've watched a little bit of Hunter Pence's streams lately. These guys, I mean, obviously they're huge competitors. They're professional athletes. But to see them get so intense over video games, and you can see their competitive nature come out even then, it's something that we've been talking about with these players. And they said, you know, it's kind of nice to get that competitive energy out because it's the only way that they can. And they're all having a ton of fun. One thing that really sticks out to me was, I believe it was on his birthday, too, to add insult to injury, Hunter Pence was celebrating the game-winning run that he hit. And for whatever reason, there was a glitch, and his runner did not touch home plate, and he was out. That was the final out of the inning. And these games only go three innings because of time constraints, and they try to fit everything in into a reasonable time. But that game actually ended up going a full nine innings before a winner could be announced. I don't even remember who won, but I just remember thinking, Hunter, you're over here celebrating, and you get thrown out at the plate. It was just really funny to watch, and I think it's a nice little break. Like I said last week, it really allows us to see these personalities of these guys, how they interact with each other, you know, because when we see them against other players, they're competing against other, you know, they're competing against each other. And you don't get to see the camaraderie they have or the relationships that they have because many of these guys are friends from different teams, from different levels in the minor leagues. So it's really nice to see that connection. And then you also get the other side of that in where when is Hunter Pence ever going to talk to Jesus Luzardo? That's what Jesus was telling me last week. He said, you know, I'd probably never meet Hunter Pence in my life. And because of this tournament, I did, and he's a great dude. And now I feel like he's someone I can, you know, go talk to and have conversations with. So I think all in all, you know, just a fantastic idea by MLB to do this.
Very good. Carrie, are you still ducking Katie in this thing?
my internet connection from my PlayStation ran out this week. I was having some glitches, so I didn't even have the chance to contact Katie. So, yes, I am still technically ducking her in terms of playing against her.
All right. Well, eventually you're going to have to deal with it. Or, you know, we're not going to be on again. So. We did a lot of Linscomb today. On KMBR, and everyone on the show is sort of given their inner thoughts of Tim Lincecum, and I'll let you guys do it as well. Of course, we had the two no-hitters and the Atlanta Brave game, but just what he meant to you and the no-hitters and a little bit of your insight of Tim Lincecum. So, Carrie, go ahead. You can start that.
Well, Marty, I was never really focused on prospects growing up as a fan. And, you know, I watched the Giants. I watched them very closely. But I didn't know much about the minor leagues other than that the Fresno Grizzlies were, for a long time, the AAA affiliate of the Giants. But I remember specifically after Tim Lincecum was drafted, I followed that draft a little bit, sitting at home and listening to the minor league baseball streams on the internet following his very brief minor league career and just, you know, noting that he would have these incredible performances in the minor leagues and it generated so much hype and excitement. And then he absolutely lived up to the expectations. He surpassed every expectation that every fan could have when he did reach the major leagues. And, you know, you talk, I saw you mention in your tweet, you know, the greatest right-handers of all time, Greg Maddux, Pedro Martinez, certainly in that conversation. But Tim Lincecum's peak in 2008, 2009, 2010, really probably not rivaled by anyone other than maybe Clayton Kershaw over the last, I don't know, 20 years in baseball, just because he was so transcendent. He was so unhittable at times. And that 14 strikeout performance against the Braves, I think, even with the Matt Cain perfect game, even with his no-hitters, Jonathan Sanchez's no-hitter, I would put that right up there with the greatest game any Giants pitcher has pitched in my lifetime and probably, you know, a lot longer than that, too, because it was just a sensational performance. There was no touching Lincecum that night.
30 swings and misses.
Yeah.
And Mark J. Simon says some Sports Info Solutions coming on later in the show. And I think he had mentioned the only one close to that in some period of time was Garrett Cole, who had like 31. But Lincecum was that dramatic in And he got swings and misses on his fastball, too. So that was unusual as well. Katie, what about you with Lincecum? Where does he fit into your life?
Well, I think Carrie touched on all the physical performances of Lincecum. You know, growing up, I was always big on pitching, which is ironic when you grew up in the Bay Area during the Barry Bonds era. But I love pitchers. One of the first players I can remember mimicking or having an interest in was Barry Zito, of course, when he was with the A's. And what sticks, so I've always kind of really emphasized pitching more than I did position players. And that goes to the same now in my career. But going back, what I think really stands out about Tim Lincecum, of course, you have all these memorable things he did on the mound, the two no-hitters. You know, I remember the Chronicle front page after the 2010 World Series win, and that photo of him where his hair is all over the place and he's pumped up, and I have that frame somewhere in my room still. What really strikes me about Tim Lincecum is the emotion that he brought, because as you both remember, in between the Barry Bonds era and, you know, the Buster Posey 2010, 2012, 2014 era, there was a very down part, a very glum part of Giants history. And when Tim Lincecum came up and reached his peak in 2008, 2009, that kind of, for me, sparked something like, hey, this is something to look forward to. Okay, hey, the Giants have, you know, a glimmer of hope here. This is exciting. And it kind of brought a little bit of the magic back that you lost in the mid-2000s. And I don't know, for me, it kind of reignited something in San Francisco saying, hey, we have something to get excited about. This is something cool that's going on in this city. And, I mean, who would have thought that based on his frame and just who he is as a person, I think he still scares a lot of Giants on-camera media about his language choices sometimes. Who would have thought that Tim Lincecum would have had the impact that he did on that city?
Boy, it's true. And even seeing him come back when Bochy did his farewell, there's just something about the kid. There's just something about him. There's something real. I mean, he's got T-shirts with sayings. And, you know, Carrie, were you there when he pitched at all, Carrie? I can't remember.
I wasn't covering the team, but I can tell you, whenever I had the chance, I bought tickets, Marty, because the aura of Tim Lincecum, Katie spelled it out so well. It was really the aura and everything he brought from an emotional standpoint, because here's this guy, 5'10", going out there, you know, probably 170 pounds soaking wet, and just dominating and embarrassing these major league players who for so long, you know, you thought you had to be the greatest looking athlete of all time. You thought you had to be strong. You thought you had to be tall. You thought you had to be physical, and Tim Lincecum gave hope to the everyman, and that's what was so cool about Tim Lincecum. It's just, you can't really capture the spirit of Lincecum in just words, because you had to experience it to know what Tim Lincecum meant to everyone.
Very good. No,
exactly.
You guys hit it well.
Yes.
No, you guys hit it well. That's exactly who he was. A couple of the questions that came out on Twitter this week, and I love the questions that people come up with, and I haven't asked you guys this. In your careers, your sports careers, who's the most important person or the most impressive person you've met in your career? It could be a baseball person, could be a politician, could be anybody. But if you say, wow, I got to meet this person, who would it be? And you don't have to say me.
Katie, you can take this away.
Okay, you know, I have two that I think are equally, I will remember forever. One, growing up, my number one favorite player of all time was JT Snow. This is a very embarrassing fun fact about me, guys, but I actually have every single one of his baseball cards ever made, from his rookie card with the Yankees in 92 to his Red Sox card at the end of his career. I have them all. So when I got to meet JT Snow in an interview setting, I believe it was 2017, I was with KNBR as their digital intern. That, you know, they say you never meet your heroes. And, of course, you know, as a professional, I didn't let on to any of that. I interviewed him just like I would any other person. But I will never, ever forget that day, because I just felt like, I don't know, 6-year-old me, 8-year-old me would never believe that she would be able to have a conversation with someone that she idolized growing up. You know, I wore number 6 to be like him. I tried to learn how to play first base, even though I'm right-handed and, you know, don't have many talents. So that was pretty cool there. And then my other one was the same summer. I was able to interview Barry Bonds for, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 minutes. And he asked me where I was working, and I said, oh, I work for KNBR. And he looked me right in my eyes and joked around, and, well, maybe he was joking, maybe he wasn't, said, oh, well, I guess they're hiring anybody these days. And that's how the interview ended. But, you know, he was very receptive to my questions. He gave me good answers, so I'll take that. You know, at least I can tell my friends, you know, well, Barry Bonds roasted me, so
okay.
There's that.
I like that. I like that about Kerry.
That's a really fascinating question, Marty, and something that I think that I even pondered today. And I would probably say Mike Kruko, because you talk about what a person means to you. And Mike Kruko is someone I always idolized growing up because I always wanted to be a broadcaster. I always wanted to talk about baseball on television. And I even went to college and majored in broadcasting before I became a writer. And the stories that people tell about Mike Kruko, he is as kind of a human being and as nice of a person as you could possibly imagine. And so for me, meeting the whole broadcasting team, Dwayne Kuiper, Mike Kruko, John Miller, Dave Fleming, Erwin Higueros, Tito Fuentes, you as well on the pre- and post-game shows, that was really the thrill for me. It was less about meeting the athletes because I decided at you know probably the age of 11 or 12 that I wanted to pursue a career in sports media. And just to know someone was as authentic and genuine as they come across on television. So I would probably give you a different answer every single day because I've come across so many really remarkable people. But Mike certainly at the very top of the list and in the conversation.
Right, very good. You know, it's funny for me. I think it's Vin Scully because I grew up mm-hmm. in Brooklyn. And like Katie, mm-hmm. when I talk to Vin Scully, I'm 6 years old. And and you guys know I've interviewed thousands of people. You know, and I tell the story to people. When I talk to Vince Scully, I can hardly get the words out. I just want to stand there and listen. So I think he probably would be the one for me. And for a politician, I think it's Nancy Pelosi. I mean,
yeah.
Speaker of the House. I mean, I got to meet her and talk baseball with her. Her father was mayor of Baltimore and helped bring the Orioles to Baltimore. And that's probably the most significant politician I've ever met, I think.
It's a good one to meet.
Answers. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the question. I like the question. Mm-hmm. It's a good question. I'll give you one more easy one before I let you guys go. I appreciate you being on. By the way, next week we start at 7 p.m. So adjust your clock. So it'll be a little bit later next week. Here's the question. I saw a lot of movies this week. And, of course, MLB Network has the same movies cycling all the time, so you get to see them all. But Bull Durham, Major League, Field of Dreams, and The Natural. And if you had to pick your favorite out of those four, where would you go, Katie?
Honestly, Marty, my favorites are so – I mean, all baseball movies are good ones – but my favorite is so far above those four, and I feel like, you know, I appreciate what MLB Network is doing, but I can't watch them anymore. So I think if I had to pick my favorite one, it wouldn't even be close to those four. I'd be a toss-up between The Sandlot for the nostalgia reason of being a kid and,
okay.
you know, looking back to playing wiffle ball in the court with my dad and our neighbors. And then most recently, my newest favorite baseball movie is A League of Their Own. I mean, that is just mm-hmm. such a well-done movie with just the humor and the storylines and the history behind it. Those two blow the other four out of the water, I'm sorry to say.
Yeah, The Sandlot was terrific, and I related to that, especially the dog and the ball. And I can't mm-hmm. tell you how many times that happened to me in Brooklyn. But, A League of Their Own should be in the list. I was favorably impressed watching Bull Durham this time, and I hadn't seen it probably in 20 years. And I don't know, it just was. And you, look, you're a minor league expert. It just really was a slice of the minor leagues, and I just thought it was better than I remembered it. So that's why I put it in there. Kerry, how about you?
Of that list, I would take Major League, but like Katie, I'm going to go off the board, and I'm going to choose the little-known movie called Summer Catch, which is based on the Cape Cod League, Marty, where I kind of got my start in baseball, and so it's about this, you know, guy that who plays for the Chatham Anglers, and he falls in love out in Cape Cod. And it's a really hokey movie, probably terribly done. Never in consideration when you talk about the best sports movies of all time. But I lived out in Cape Cod. I got to experience the Cape Cod Baseball League, which has produced so many major league players. So it resonated so much with me on a personal level, and it just it brings me back to the memories of, you know, broadcasting Pete Alonso hitting home runs out there, Nick Solak, the big Texas Rangers prospect, Brendan McKay, who was the two-way player for the Tampa Bay Rays. He was platooning with Alonso on the team that I broadcasted for. Harrison Bader, the center fielder for the Cardinals. So it really gave me a foundation in baseball. And so that, to me, for sentimental reasons, that's why it's my favorite movie.
You think we'll have Cape Cod baseball this year?
I do not, unfortunately, which would be really, really sad because that region depends on it, and it is just such an important part of baseball and the scouting process, the amateur process, and kind of every big scout who looks at the amateur draft goes out to Cape Cod or files their reports from Cape Cod on the guys who are out there, and so it's really the best of the best when it comes to amateur baseball, and the experiences that I had out there, I wouldn't trade them for anything. And so the fact that we probably won't have it this year, obviously disappointing to me.
Katie, you ever been up there to see the Cape Cod League or anything like it?
It's always been on my bucket list. I've had multiple friends who have done it. I never had an opportunity took an opportunity to go out to the Cape Cod League, but I've always wanted to. So definitely I plan on doing it at some point in my career. Back over here, though, I used to work for a summer collegiate baseball team. It's the California Collegiate League. And, you know, there's something about small-town summer college baseball that really just kind of makes you appreciate the root of the sport. And I'm talking, like, you know, metal bleachers or even wood bleachers when you get, like, splinters in your thighs that you're sitting at. It's 105 degrees outside. Everything is miserable, but you're still having the time of your life. And the small town camaraderie of baseball in the summer is something that I think I miss just as much as, you know, showing up to work in a 50,000 person stadium. And just, I love the different elements of the game that they have at each level. And, you know, no summer baseball, no college level baseball for the summertime is just as sad to me.
That's good. Well, you guys are great. I appreciate it. Very, very good answers. And I like talking ball with you. We'll see where this thing goes, whether we'll see any baseball here or where it's going to go. But, Carrie, I know you're out on the front lines and still working. And, Katie, you're doing your best at trying to keep all this stuff together. So that's all we can do and just hope for the best. So I appreciate you being on. Carrie, how are the folks this week?
They're doing well, Marty, hanging in there. And, you know, my mom's out on the front lines going to work every day. And so I'm really proud of her. And, you know, it's a tough situation for everyone, but we're making the best of it.
Good. And Original Joe's this week for you?
Yeah, we did get Original Joe's for my roommate's birthday, as promised. I sent you a picture. We had like three bags there, didn't we?
Yes, you did. I was very impressed. John Dugan thanks you. It was very good.
Yes. Well, we thank John Dugan. It was delicious.
Katie, don't forget, you're at our first dinner, so don't worry about it. So you're in.
I will not forget.
All right.
I promise.
All right, guys. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
Yes,
thanks
talk
so much,
to you soon.
All right, be well. All right, that is Katie Wu and Carrie Crowley, if I could say that quickly, on a Saturday night after being on for 2.5 hours. And we've got a lot more coming up.